Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WJLA 7 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
We have two really interesting subjects for you today. One has to do with your health, and the other with your pocketbook, actually, with the way you make charitable donations. So we're going to discuss these with Rick Berman, who is the president of RBB Strategies, and he's on the board of the RAM, or RAM Veterans Foundation. Rick, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thanks so much, Shirley. Good to be with you.
Now, health. Of course, anything about health, we always want to know. We want to get the facts, and we want to understand what's going on. And you recently wrote a rather interesting article in the Washington Times, and it was entitled, We May Regret Our Retreat from Plastic Bottles. Now, I know that we've had a lot of publicity about plastic bottles. So you've got this, you got that, they're polluting our oceans and so on. Well, there's a group of scientists that say that this is not true. And so anyway, there's obviously a big discussion going on about the use of plastic. But let's talk first about what your article contained, which is why there is such cause about the concern about the move to aluminum cans. And you pointed out that aluminum can be very toxic to the human body. Do you want to develop that theme?
Well, you know, the science on aluminum is pretty clear. You do get a problem with aluminum with, let's call it an allergic reaction, or it goes so far as for some scientists to suggest that aluminum is involved in Alzheimer's. Now, let me start from the beginning and give you a little bit of a tutorial in this. Aluminum cans are generally experienced by people either with a beer can, a soda can, etc. And the interesting thing, for starters, is that all of those cans have a plastic liner. It's a very, very thin layer of plastic, and an epoxy, if you will, to protect the contents from coming in contact with the raw aluminum can. And the problem is that some of the contents have acid in them. It's a mild acid, like citric acid that you find in orange juice. And the acid can interact with the aluminum, and it can change the taste of the content. But there's also a suspicion by some scientists that nanoparticles could come off of the aluminum, and you could end up drinking some of them in small amounts, probably has absolutely no impact on your health. But on the other hand, when scientists have done autopsies, you know, where it's been allowed for Alzheimer patients, they have found a high concentration of aluminum in the brains of people who have died, and in the area where the brain has shown evidence of Alzheimer's, there's a concentration of aluminum. Now, the question then becomes, did aluminum cause Alzheimer's, or is in fact the Alzheimer's situation somehow creating the body to capture aluminum? Now, nobody knows that, and even the government has said that the evidence is not clear one way or the other. But there is anecdotal evidence, for example, foundry workers in Indonesia who have worked in aluminum foundries have all, well, I shouldn't say all, 70% of the subjects of a study have shown cognitive decline. And these are people who are working around aluminum. There's aluminum in the air. They're obviously breathing in aluminum dust. And so you get all of these questionable issues about aluminum. And And the other area that, again, it's anecdotal, but I think is important. When scientists are looking for a cure for Alzheimer's, they use animals. You know, they use rabbits, they use mice, rats, etc. And if you're going to look for a cure for Alzheimer's, the first thing you have to do is you have to give Alzheimer's to these animals. And the way they do it is with aluminum salts in the diet. They give them a heavy dose of aluminum, and that creates Alzheimer's. And then they can obviously work on the cure. So when you capture all of these, as I say, these anecdotal pieces of evidence, it makes you wonder whether or not aluminum is really the safest material that we should be dealing with. And aluminum is everywhere. Aluminum is the third most prevalent element in the Earth's crust. So aluminum is, you know, readily available, used for lots of reasons, you know, from aluminum foil to aluminum cans to car parts, etc. So I'm somewhat suspicious, and it may be decades before we're able to find out what the real impact of aluminum is on health, because obviously you can't do experiments on living human beings. And the fight, quite frankly, comes down to simply things like, should we have an aluminum container or a plastic container? You know, a lot of people are opposed to plastics. They say for environmental reasons, you know, plastics are destroying the oceans, destroying the environment. A lot of it is exaggeration. Quite frankly, there's probably not enough plastic being recycled, and there isn't enough aluminum being recycled. I mean, both of those containers are not being recycled even at a 50% rate, and we need to do a better job of recycling. But that's a different story. That's an environmental story rather than a health story.
You know,
I
was just going to say, one of the interesting things about this to me is that we may be, as you pointed out, maybe changing one thing for another that perhaps is, in the long run, is worse. But then the bigger question also becomes, the move against plastic bottles doesn't seem to be really based on health, because everything that I've been reading says that there's really not any evidence that using plastic bottles is worse than using aluminum, or aluminum any better than plastic. So it's an interesting subject that we have here, because who's pushing it? Who's pushing it? Are the environmentalists? Are somebody trying to get rid of fossil fuels? Because isn't plastic, I think, is made from fossil fuels? And don't answer that, because we're going to take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. My guest today is Rick Berman. He is the president of RBB Strategies, and he is also on the board of RAM Veterans Foundation. And we're talking about the ramifications of moving from plastic to aluminum and the impact on health. But I look at this also, since it seems like the scientific evidence, Rick, is really very mixed. I look at this from the agenda behind it. And to my mind, it's because people want to get rid of fossil fuels. I mean, I know that's a great exaggeration or simplification, but it does make me wonder.
Well, you shouldn't have to wonder for too long, because there's usually some crazy agenda that people have that's not in evidence. And I think the fossil fuel argument is a suspicious one. It's likely that the environmentalists are opposed to it because there is an oil base to plastics. On the other hand, somebody could make the claim that the aluminum industry is fighting it out with the plastics industry purely for market share. And I couldn't prove to you one way or the other. There is a company out there called Liquid Death that makes aluminum cans for water, and they're very clear on their marketing about they're trying to kill plastics. So you could take your choice as to who's behind it and what what the real motivation is.
I read all of this stuff, and you know, it is very confusing. And I'm sure that, as one scientist pointed out, most consumers don't bother reading all the data behind a report. Now, this was a scientist who was saying that the use of plastic bottles is not detrimental to our health, and that all the studies say that they're safe. It is interesting to me, and you know, I had forgotten this. I think I had known it, but that the aluminum cans are lined with plastic.
Right.
Stop and think about that for a moment. So what is that saying to us about the use of plastic, since it's making and protecting us from aluminum? I mean, really? Come on.
And you know, here's a, you know, again, another very small piece of evidence if you're looking for anecdotes. First of all, plastics that we normally come into contact with are what they call PET plastics or polyethylene plastics. And that's what you see in containers or bottles, you know, plastic bottles. I'm not talking about the plastics that they use to make toys or, you know, Lego sets or something like that. And that plastic that is in bottles, this PET plastic, are considered to be non-toxic. They don't have, and the scientists have said, you know, if you should get some plastic nanoplastics, you know, microplastics in your body, they're non-toxic. And you know, the body has an unusual ability to clear out what we'll call alien substances from the body. There's plenty of science that says that when you get dust from any of these materials in your body, you know, we breathe dust in all the time, various elements of dust. I mean, concrete dust, silica, which is sand dust. It's in the air. We even breathe in dust that falls to the earth from space. There's an enormous amount. There's tons of dust that basically comes from meteorites that hit this atmosphere every day. And we're breathing in this dust all the time, but the body has a clearance capacity to take care of some of this alien stuff. But once it's in your body, it can have a toxic effect if you get enough of it. I mean, we're familiar with asbestos dust, for example, which is very toxic to lungs. But think about this. When you get a knee replacement or a hip replacement or a pacemaker, some part of it is plastic. And so they're literally putting pieces of plastic in people's bodies. And nobody is complaining that some of that plastic is going to peel off and affect your health. So on one hand, there's a lot of screaming about a plastic water bottle. On the other hand, here they're putting big pieces of plastic in your bottle. Body and nobody says anything about it.
Well, you know what? I have two knees. I had two knee replacements. They are wonderful. I think my life would be so different if I hadn't had them done. That was all those years of tennis. But and I seem to be faring quite well with them. So anyway, let's go to our other favorite subject, which is our money. Interesting article you wrote, also another article, Rick. By the way, you're a prolific writer. I really enjoy what you write. And this one was entitled "Beware Charity Watchdogs" in the Washington Times. Now, I had always thought that I knew there were safe places to turn to check out charities if I wanted to make a donation. However, you have raised some interesting questions and put some doubt in my mind as to where do I go in order to see whether or not this charity is worth my support. And one of the things that's a key finding generally for consumers is what part of the donations that you make are going to actual stated purpose of the charity. Now, Call for Action is a nonprofit, and we operate, our operational administrative expenses are very small. The biggest thing we have, of course, is rent for our office. Some of these companies, some of these organizations, they spend a ton of money on advertising and promoting themselves, and not very much money on their stated purposes. So give us a little bit of an overview here, Rick, on what you are referring to when you're talking about some of these charities. Now, we have to disclose that you are on the board of the RAM Veterans Foundation. So you could first off tell us what that is.
Sure. Well, the RAM Veterans Foundation might make you, just the name might make you think that we're collecting money to either provide programs or services to veterans. Just like the so many thousands, and there really are thousands of other veteran organizations that claim to do the same thing. We are different in one regard, one major regard, and that is we are doing nothing more than creating a consumer reports for veteran charities. So I am telling people, if you go and look at our information on our website, which is charitiesforvets.org, if you go there, you'll see that we are grading other charities in their efficiency, in how well they take in donor money and spend it. Some of these charitable organizations that you see advertised on television or they use direct mail, some of these organizations have extremely high overhead. And it seems unconscionable to me that you get a charity that takes in a dollar and only 10 cents of that dollar ends up providing a service or a program as it was promised to the donor. Other charities will have 90% of the money that you give them actually employed as you had hoped that they would. So what we're doing is we're grading the charities on how well they handle people's money. And there are other rating agencies out there. Of course, we're only rating veteran charities, and we're only rating big veteran charities. We're rating 104 charities right now. As I said, there's thousands of these little ones. On the other hand, the rating agencies that you're familiar with, like Charity Navigator, Better Business Bureau, Charity Watch, and there are a couple of others. Those charity rating agencies are rating charities of various kinds. They're rating healthcare charities, they're rating children's charities, etc. So we're only doing veterans. But I have a problem with how those other rating agencies actually determine whether or not a charity is good or bad as an investment of your money. And you can pick a veteran charity, for example, if you look at our lists of 100, you can pick one out of there. I don't want to start naming names here, but we'll just call it Charity X. Well, Charity X says that they do a great job in providing housing for homeless veterans. And then when you look on Charity Navigator, they'll give it 5 stars, 4 stars. They'll give it a high rating. And then you go to Charity Watch, and they'll say it's a failing charity. Now, here's two rating agencies looking at the same charity, and they have widely different views as to whether or not you should give them money. So now you wonder, well, what rating agency should I use? And that's a real question. And then there's the question of even if a rating agency is good, you might have to buy a subscription to get the full rating agency's research. So if you're going to give $25 away to a charity, you probably are not going to spend $75 for a subscription to find out if that charity is a good charity or not. So what you're probably doing is you're just responding to the advertisements, and all these advertisements are very emotional. And so people get caught up in that, as older people are definitely getting caught up in it. And they're not going to be doing their own independent research. They're not going to look at tax returns. And then deciphering these tax returns is another problem. And that's what we do. We look at the tax returns of all these 100 plus charities that we're rating. And we make a hard determination as to whether or not they're worthy of giving your money to them. I mean, I look at them, And my standard is, would I give my money to a particular charity?
Yeah, let's just take a, I have to take a pause here. Rick, let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. And my guest today is Rick Berman. He's the president of RBB Strategies and on the board of RAM Veterans Foundation. Now, you were just talking about the very great variation in the way these charity watchdogs are rating these people. Is there any way to determine why? I mean, how can you look at data and come up with such two diverse events? Is there any answer to that?
Yeah, well, the answer is simple. They all use an algorithm, their own formula for rating a particular charity, but the formulas are different. So for example, one rating agency may look at how much money the charity keeps in reserve, and another rating agency may not look at that at all. So there's one charity on our website that has 17 years worth of their operating budget in reserve. That means that they could run that charity for 17 years on their current budget without raising another dollar. Now, most people, if they knew that that's how much money this organization had in the bank or had in investments, they wouldn't be quick to send them even more money.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Yeah.
Right. So on the other hand, another rating agency might not look at that particular factor. They might not think that how much money an organization has in the bank is relevant. And so that's where you get these big differences, is that they start off in different places. Some of them make a bigger deal about overhead expenses, and somebody else, some other organization says, well, overhead's not that important. Well, I think overhead's very important. You know, how much money are you spending on rent for your office? How much money are you spending on salaries for your chief executive officer and your other senior executives, which is where overhead comes into play. So depending upon what you think is important will depend upon how you rate these charities, and that gives you these different ratings.
You know, it is so confusing, and I'm sure our listeners are sitting there thinking, well, how do I know where to give? I mean, how do I know? That, there's no really easy answer to that, is there? We only have just about a half a minute here.
Well, you could look at the rating agencies. Again, if you're going to give $25, you're probably not going to spend all that kind of, you're not going to spend that
right.
kind of time. But you could look at, you know, a couple of different rating agencies and see whether or not they make any sense. The Better Business Bureau has a system which I find to be totally abhorrent. I don't like it at all. To me, it's the worst. The one that's the best is Charity Watch, but again, you have to spend money to get their ratings.
Yeah, well, Rick, we're going to have to end it. I can't believe it. The time has just sped by so fast. It's been a great honor to have you on our program, and your articles and the things that you're writing about are really important to us. So thank you.
People, thank you,
you've
Shirley.
Been turned, my pleasure. We've been tuned into Of Consuming Interest here on the Federal News Network. My guest has been Rick Berman, who's president of RBB Strategies, and he's on the board of RAM Veterans Foundation. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WJLA-7 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.